This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Following a landslide vote to pass the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement in the House last week, the trade deal will now be heading to the Senate. A vote, expected in January, could come early in the month, depending on how the impeachment articles are handled. House Speaker Pelosi last week elected to hang on to the impeachment documents rather than sending them off immediately to the Senate. Depending on how long she chooses to hold them, the action could clear a window for the Senate to consider USMCA. Senate Finance Chairman Chuck Grassley on Friday announced his committee intends to hold a markup hearing on January 7th, based on the expectation that the Senate will have received the legislation beforehand from the House. Grassley says this markup will move us closer to ratifying USMCA in early 2020. Senate leadership expects they could quickly consider and pass the agreement within a couple of days. However, if the Senate must start the year with the impeachment trial, then a vote will come near the end of January or even early February following the hearing. In national livestock news, the USDA reports a record hog inventory for the fourth quarter at 77.3 million head. That's up 3% from a year ago. The quarterly hogs and pigs report put the breeding inventory at 6.4 million head, and that's up more than 2% from last year. Marketings were at a record high at 70.9 million head, and that's up 3% from a year ago. Steiner Consulting Group senior analyst Alton Callow says the breeding hog numbers points to another year of record production in the year ahead.
When you look at where that growth has come, it's come in some states that are not the largest hog-producing states. They're large, but they're not the largest. The biggest growth came from Illinois. When you look at Iowa, actually the breeding herd was down slightly. When you look at North Carolina, the breeding herd was unchanged. This increase in the breeding herd certainly will underpin supply growth for the second half of next year, and I think will set us up for another record year in 2020.
Chinese pork production has been decimated by African swine fever, and the U.S. swine industry has responded with an increase in production. Callow remains optimistic about the export opportunities to China.
We have to remember that over 60% of the consumption in China is based on pork. And so as much as they can diversify, we're not so sure that consumer attitudes can change that quickly. They can certainly increase their consumption of chicken. They will probably take advantage of the ample supplies of chicken that are available worldwide. But they still face a significant shortfall of pork production. And in order to fill some of that gap, they will probably have to rely on the world supply to do that. It was somewhat telling that one of the items that they lowered their broad tariffs for 2020 was pork, bringing down their tax or tariff from 12% to 8%. Now, that is for pork that they can import from anywhere, but it certainly speaks to the fact that they are trying to encourage higher imports, even though they're going to have all-time record high imports in 2019.
Livestock Marketing Information Center agricultural economist Tyler Cousin sees the U.S. as best prepared to meet export demand for pork.
USDA's Foreign Ag Service, what they're forecasting for kind of Europe's hog production over the next year going through 2020 is basically flat to slightly down. So they're really only the country that's increasing is Spain. If you kind of think about what's going on as far as major suppliers, as far as pork globally, you've got EU, but then you've got the U.S. next. And so I guess if China's looking for kind of pork supplies, the U.S. is kind of the obvious stop. You know, but I think also as you kind of turn a little bit to the U.S. production side of things and a lot of potential exports going to China, you know, we're seeing this increase in production that we're forecasting here, you know, but also keep in mind that that's kind of in parallel with what we're forecasting as far as per capita consumption increases in the U.S. here as far as that growth goes. So as far as we're going to export more, we're also going to be consuming more. And so we're seeing, I mean, that demand seems to be remaining strong here domestically, but I think the foreign demand is also a key component of this too.
As a service, the Pork Checkoff hosted a media teleconference following the USDA's report. Moving on to more Christmas-themed news, are the holidays stressing you out? One expert has some ways to reduce the holiday stress level. Gary Crawford has more with the USDA.
It's the holiday season.
Yes, it is, and it has its good points, but as comedian Ellen DeGeneres points out,
the holidays can be stressful. There's a lot to do, and it doesn't help that it's darker outside, it's colder. The other day, it was like 68 and drizzling here in L.A., so I get it.
Uh-huh, yeah.
That's a bummer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But it is true. This can be a very stressful time. Lots of reasons for that. First, physically.
Most people are not eating as well. And, you know, our diet makes a big difference. And then also how much sleep we're getting.
Dr. Jim Bates, he's an extension family wellness expert at Ohio State University, and he says as far as diets go, we tend to eat more sweets and other snack-type foods, which it's been proven can rev up production of substances in our bodies that trigger the stress responses. Also, less sleep makes it harder for us to battle the stressors in our lives. But beyond those, many of us have extra financial stress this time of year and time stress. Much of those may have to do with our expectations of all the stuff we're supposed to do, expectations of what we think others are expecting from us.
Sometimes those expectations may be super high and unrealistic.
But we don't realize it because many of the things we do during the holidays are done without thinking about them, almost automatically. Jim Bates suggests we put on the brakes for a minute and
step back and check, you know, is that automatic stuff really the stuff that we need to be doing and want to be doing, or is it just too stressful and do we need to make some changes?
Jim Bates says the best way to really drive that home, sit down with a calendar, make a list of all the stuff we think we need to do for the next few weeks or even just the next few days, when we need to do them, what we need to do them. And he says we may be surprised at the extent of that list and just doing that, having that incredible list in front of us.
Maybe there's an opportunity to pick and choose
between what we want to do, what we need to do, and what we thought we needed to do. Now, some people just cannot make that change. Too many commitments, the fear of disappointing someone. So the stress builds up and can cause us to get sick or be grouchy or reduce the quality of our work and our family time. But Jim says there are some things we can do to try to lower that stress level. First, when not at work.
Really disconnect yourself from work. Try not to check your emails and turn off the tech and take that opportunity to really have some downtime.
It's been shown that constant exposure to news media and social electronic media raises our body's stress response, so
really having a news fast or a technology fast where we're stepping away from those things is one way of reducing stress.
And for some tips on some stress-reducing mental and physical exercises you can do in 5 minutes at work, go online, search for Ohio State University Extension Mind and Body, OSU Mind and Body. Maybe we can turn the season from this ugh to this. Ah, that's better. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Moving on to holiday-themed news on the local scene. When it comes to cooking with kids, some parents might envision warm images of their child happily working side by side with them as a delicious meal is made. On the other hand, some parents might picture a big mess, a time crunch, and barely edible food. Here to tell us and understand why we should not only include kids, but also dairy food in the kitchen, is Aaron McGraw, a registered dietitian with the St. Louis District Dairy Council, who explains that this time of year is the perfect time to get your children involved in the kitchen.
So this is definitely a great time to start thinking about pulling kids into the kitchen. With holidays and so many meals and snacks and goodies being prepared, it's a really good opportunity to start incorporating kids. Including kids in preparing meals and snacks teaches them how to prepare family meals. You can teach them about the history of some recipes, how they've been passed down, about family culture and family history. It's also a really great time for parents and kids to connect, because when you're cooking, kids may start to relax a little bit and open up about what's going on in their lives, which can often be kind of difficult to do sometimes, especially as kids get a little bit older. It's also a great way to teach math skills. There's fractions, there's temperatures, there's reading skills from reading a recipe. It also helps give kids a really great sense of accomplishment that they've prepared something, they've made it, other family members are enjoying it. It can really help boost self-confidence as well.
Aaron also explains different activities children can do in the kitchen, even kids as young as the age of 2.
Definitely. My daughter is 15 months right now, and she's not super helpful just yet. Usually starting around 2 years of age, actually, though, there are tasks that kids can do to be involved in cooking. So around 2 or 3 years old, they can help wash fruits and vegetables. They can help mash potatoes in a container that's not too hot. And they can also help apply, like, soft spreads, like cream cheese and things like that in a dish. When they get a little bit older, let's say 4 to 5 years old, they can help set the table. They can help put pots and pans away when you're emptying the dishwasher. They can stir things up for a recipe, things like sprinkling cheese on top of a salad or little ingredients like that. They can also start getting a little more involved with. And around 6 to 7, they can do things like pour milk into a measuring cup for a recipe, help peel potatoes. I just did that for a very long time, helping my mom get ready for Thanksgiving. I would have loved a 6 to 7-year-old helper for that. And then dicing and mincing vegetables, too. As they get a little bit older, they can help make sandwiches and wraps, scooping things into pans, pounding chicken around 8 or 9 years old. And by 12, they can do most tasks, like chopping and that type of thing as well.
Erin also explains that if your child is a picky eater, having them help you in the kitchen might help them overcome that pickiness.
It really does help. So when a child cooks a meal or is involved in that meal, they can a sense of ownership can be created with that food, and they'll be more likely to try it. And it can start from taking your child to the grocery store with you and make it something fun. You can test them with picking out a color in the produce department. You can assign them, find a red food that you've never tried before or that you have tried and you want to do something with, or find a green food. So starting with even selecting that food for a purchase gets the kids' wheels turning about this food and maybe wanting to try it or what they can do with it. And then as they're helping prepare it, they're being involved in getting more of a sense of, this is my dish, this is something I want to try, I want to see the end result. When a child is involved in the preparation of meals, they're more likely to try the foods they help prepare, which can be a really great way to get foods in that a child would otherwise refuse. And then the other thing to think about, too, is kids can seem really picky, but it's our job as parents to be the providers of the food. It's their job to eat it, but if you've got a picky eater, if you're only providing them the foods that you know they're going to eat, the chances of them exploring new foods and new options are going to be diminished. So a great way to start that is by offering a food you know your kid likes, but then have them help prepare. It could even be just rinsing it or stirring or mixing or something like that. Have them help prepare the new food that you offer alongside that favorite food, and just keep offering it. Some research says it takes upwards of 20 exposures for a kid to be willing to put that new food in their mouth. But even getting them feeling the texture or helping mix it or even trying it in that way increases the chances of them enjoying it.
And again, that was Erin McGraw, registered dietitian with the St. Louis District Dairy Council. Moving on now to our last state and local ag story. In a message from Doug Schroeder, chairman of the Illinois Soybean Association, he reminds us on how important soybeans are in our holiday meals. While they won't be a direct staple on our dinner table today, they do have a significant impact on the main staple of your Christmas dinner. Whether ham, turkey, chicken, beef, or fish take center stage on your dinner table, you can thank soybeans, because livestock, poultry, and fish rely on protein from soybean meal to grow into that tasty bounty. Livestock and poultry producers are the largest customers for Illinois soybeans, and feed for animal agriculture represents the top market for soybeans today. In total, over 70% of the soybeans grown in the United States end up in livestock feed, so you and I can enjoy high-quality protein not only around the holidays, but all year long. High-quality protein meal and hulls comprise nearly 80% of the crushed soybeans, which feed pigs, poultry, fish, beef, and dairy cattle. Pigs eat nearly 79% of the soybean meal fed in Illinois, while poultry consumes about 64% of the soybean meal fed in the United States. Meat exports represent the fastest-growing category of soybean meal use, with U.S. pork exports generating a market value of $120.4 million to Illinois soybeans in 2018. Beef and pork exports alone add 85 cents per bushel to the price of soybeans. Not only does feeding Illinois soybean meal add value to the crop, but exporting meat, poultry, and dairy also increases demand and market value for soybeans. As the worldwide demand for meat and poultry continues to expand, especially in the developing countries, Buyers continue to demand quality, safe meat and look for the U.S. as the consistent supplier. This, in turn, benefits soybean growers in Illinois as livestock and poultry production and exports ensure markets for Illinois-grown soybeans. And that'll do it for your Wednesday morning edition of the Ag Show. But remember, if you have ag news for us, you can email it to us at WSMI at WSMIradio.com. So for this Christmas morning, Wednesday, December 25th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting, wishing you a very Merry Christmas.